welcome to That's a Thing, a sometimes belated, already outdated guide to your teens, tweens, and everything under 20. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Karen. We're a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported.
We are, and this is the show where I completely destroy my YouTube recommendations once a month for your enjoyment. I had to look at so many anime girls for this. I do not typically look at anime girls, and now my feed is only anime girls. I still have to purge their massive, terrifying, soulless eyes from my page on YouTube, and I do not appreciate it. Not to mention all of the 10-minute clip compilations from an early 2000s TV show, which have been stalking me for actual weeks. The things I watch for you people.
Perhaps you should do your research on it in an incognito window.
I have considered this. Anyway, let's talk about weird parasocial relationships with cartoon characters.
Okay.
So, have you heard of the show Clone High?
I had not heard of the show Clone High. You mentioned it, saying, what if we talked about Clone High on the podcast? And I said, sure, I don't know what that is. And then you said, good.
Yeah. So it's also known as Clone High USA in the USA, but it's called Clone High in Canada. It was a short-lived adult cartoon. It ran from 2002 to 2003. It got canceled mid-season. It is American-Canadian, so it is CanCon. There you go. It's very American, though. The basic premise is that the U.S. government clones a bunch of major historical figures, and then the show follows those clones and the mad scientist who created them through high school. That's kind of like the premise.
Are these characters teenage-ish, or are they like they cloned them as babies and then raised them?
Cloned them and they were babies and they're raised by foster parents and now they're teenagers. They're like growing up.
Okay.
There's not really a clear goal to this, but a high school education is definitely necessary for all people of all walks of life. And so here we are, right? The core cast is Abe Lincoln, voiced by Will Forte, Joan of Arc, voiced by Nicole Sullivan, Gandhi, who was voiced by notably Caucasian man Michael McDonald, and whose portrayal combined with poor ratings got the show canceled, Cleopatra, voiced by Krista Miller, and most notably for this segment, JFK, voiced by show co-creator Chris Miller. I can't figure out how those two are related or if they are. It's weird. I have to assume, like, all I know is that they have almost the same name. Cool for them. So season one of the show was 13 episodes long. It ended on a cliffhanger, and it had a standard A plot, B plot structure with what I describe as like stylistically cheap looking animation. Like on purpose, if the character isn't speaking, they are totally stationary with their eyes open in an awkward pose for minutes. It's fun. It managed to pull guest stars like Jack Black and Marilyn Manson, though. So it has like connections to a lot of the people who were on Scrubs and then like some guest stars who were like big in the early 2000s and stuff. So the people who were running it were connected.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. After the cancellation, the show fell into obscurity with a small cult following. This is not the kind of thing I usually talk about on this podcast. So you might be wondering, why am I talking about it on this podcast? Why do I know this stuff? This is not stuff I typically care about. In 2018, Clone High did something deceptively smart. Can you guess what that is?
No, it sounds dumb from the beginning, except for knowing the right people. So.
It's kind of tightly written. Anyway, you have no idea?
No.
It posted the entirety of the show on a YouTube channel called Retro Rerun. Apparently 2002 is retro now, by the way.
Oh my god.
Completely free to watch, accessible to everybody. It has since been viewed over 7.3 million times in this format, which is probably more than it got viewed on its original run. If you look at the video, it's just like 4 hours of content. Anyway, if you look at the video, you'll notice the comment section is weirdly active for a 2-year-old video. If you look at comments from 1 month ago, they'll have like thousands of likes.
Wow.
Which means like people are watching it actively and like interacting with it, which is also like weird for a video that long, right? Many of the people commenting are around my age. So are a bunch of 17-year-olds nostalgic about a show that was canceled the year they were born? Question.
Wow.
The answer is no. They just like that JFK talks funny.
Oh, so they didn't even know really what this is. It's just interesting content that came across their feed.
Yeah. So basically, Chris Miller's JFK voice is like this really distinct, really cool piece of voice acting that really makes the character stand out as just like totally the standout character of the show. And he managed to become a TikTok meme.
Oh.
And that brought the show out of obscurity and in front of like tons of teenagers.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know, right? So Clone High JFK became a meme like 2 to 3 months ago. People have made fan compilations where they string together just all of the scenes he's in, which is like only 10 minutes. It's like 10-20 minutes, but he's like, whatever. There are trans man headcanons because that's how rabid the fandom has gotten. There's like one scene where he's inexplicably in the girl's bathroom because it's like an absurdist show and they just put people in places. And like from that, they're sprouted like trans man JFK recognition and stuff, and just like this totally wild like fan base for this character that's like half ironic and half sincere. For a while it's like just crazy. JFK is actually meant to be the villain of the show. He's okay. Like this bully jock stereotype, and the protagonist is supposed to be Abe Lincoln, who's like the gangly nerd who doesn't really like live up to the reputation of the guy he's cloned from and all this stuff, but he's very boring, so we like JFK instead. He's just a really fun, unique character, and he has so many good lines, like just really, really solid writing, that the modern audience is just in love with him. So the thing that became the TikTok meme is, and we're going to throw the actual audio in here because this is criticism and review, so the copyright people can't get me. Anyway, it's JFK going,
"Nothing bad ever happens to the Kennedys!"
Immediately before getting into a car accident.
Oh my God.
Which is a golden line if you know anything about the Kennedys.
Yes.
So that became a TikTok meme template, basically. So the same way that we've talked about meme templates before, the same way that like you'll have an image that represents a certain thing, like a certain mood that you're trying to convey, and then you put your own situation into it. It's the same thing on TikTok. So the way this TikTok meme works is basically, you're like, oh, I'm doing so good. I'm doing so good. I'm in like junior high, and high school is going to be fine because I'm doing fine in junior high. And now I'm in high school and the car crash happens, right? And it's like kind of predictable disaster, right, is the mood. And this got like big, and it's still used in TikToks now. Like it's not at its peak anymore. That was about 2 months ago, 1 month ago. But it's like just kind of become part of the background at this point. And it's been thrown into a bunch of different, like, compilation memes, which use a bunch of audio like that and stuff. So it's going to be around for a while, I would say. All of this led to more and more people checking out the show. and it managed to gain actual fans from it. I have watched the show for science and content. In my opinion, it has a lot of filler and hasn't aged very well. Cool. Yeah, it's unique. I can see why people latch onto it. It's just not my thing.
Right.
It's very much a parody of a kind of show that doesn't really exist anymore, like that sort of Dawson's Creek high school drama. Mm-hmm. Now all of those are super edgy, like Teen Wolf and Riverdale and 13 Reasons Why. So it's almost like not a good parody for that kind of teen show anymore because it's just totally changed directions. But, you know, it's like a really good time capsule for a time I don't remember because I was 0 years old.
Do you think somewhere at Netflix or some other one of the many, many, many streaming services now, there's someone getting in trouble for not realizing that they should have bought Clone High for like 17 cents because it was going to blow up big?
Well, apparently the creators have been pushing for like a reboot of the series from like the start when it was canceled. So there are people who like love this show. Not one of them, but you know, like there are people who are there for it. If you do want to check out the original season of Clone High, which we will link in the show notes, it's free. It's there. It's not going to be taken down by copyright because the people put it up. Yeah. It wasn't making any money. Now it has a bunch of ads on it and people watch it regularly. So like they're doing much better now than they were before, which is weird. I would recommend episode 9, Raisin the Stakes. Raisin the Stakes is in like the fruit. A rock opera in 3 acts.
Okay, I'm sold.
It's a rock opera making fun of like anti-drug PSAs, like those Saturday morning cartoons. And it has Jack Black in like full rock star glory, nice. Tenacious D type like... just having fun. Weirdly, Clone High is kind of a musical show. Like you wouldn't really expect that from it. And I was like watching it and I'm like, oh, there are musical numbers in this. I was okay, all right, cool. This is not the speed I was expecting from this, but you know,
you're selling me on it. I'm gradually getting very interested in watching this.
it's like it's not worth watching all 4 hours in a single sitting like I did, I will say. But like if you want to throw something on that's like totally different from stuff you've watched, probably a good pick. The absurdism of it is pretty interesting. Sometimes characters do something for no discernible reason other than like no short-term memory or brain cells happening. Definitely, like, if you pay attention to the dialogue, there's some tight writing going on, stuff to appreciate there. The reason I keep saying original season, first season of Clone High is because it is getting a reboot.
It is getting a reboot.
It was announced this year. The original creators and writers remain involved with the show. Gandhi will almost certainly be cut, which is good because it did get them canceled the first time. I will say it's not a white guy putting on like a stereotypical Indian accent or anything. It's not like Apu from The Simpsons. It's just like not great. Okay. In like a broad, like you probably should have known better kind of way. But you know, they'll probably cut it or turn him into a different character that's going to have less pushback or something like that. The original run is very, very dated, like very, very early 2000s as a show. It's a parody of early 2000s culture. This is actually not a bad thing for a reboot because that's moving into the nostalgia cycle now. Like I'm almost 20 and that's kind of when the nostalgia cycle starts up for that kind of thing. So, you know, they might actually be able to take advantage of that and really lean into the early 2000s-ness of it. Y2K fashion is coming back, by the way, which is... not a good idea. Don't do it. Stop. The waist of the jeans need to be high because then they actually cover your body like the pants are supposed to do. I have strong opinions about this period of fashion and dress and I do not appreciate it. Anyway, now there are people who are super excited about this reboot and basically just want the same thing as the original show because there's so little of it. So it'll be interesting to see that come back. It'll be interesting to see if they handle having this one breakout character well. Because one of my worries about something like this is that they'll like lean so hard into JFK being the big character that they'll basically destroy it, which isn't good because then everybody's going to be mad about that. And it's just going to be like, we only like original JFK. But if it can maintain the hype, then this might pave the way for like a whole new style of marketing campaign.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I find that interesting.
But again, how do you engineer something that's going to be authentically embraced by TikTok? Like you can't. Can you?
I mean, people are going to try. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Is it the case that Cleopatra is the only female character in this show?
No, there's Cleopatra and Joan of Arc, and it is very much kind of the female dichotomy of like the socially conscious, responsible kind of ultra feminist Joan of Arc, and then like the promiscuous cheerleader, man eater Cleopatra, and it has aged poorly and was probably bad at the time.
Yeah, holy. That's terrible. Yeah. That's terrible. And also, the only female leaders they could find were from, like, medieval Europe and, like, 10,000 years ago.
To be fair, the show is generally Eurocentric and kind of, like, problematic when it isn't. Yeah. So, you know, could be technically worse. I'll be interested to see. I know they're keeping the same core cast, minus Gandhi, for the reboot. But it'll be interesting to see if they expand that at all or anything. There is an episode where, like, Ponce de Leon is, like, a main character for it. Then he gets killed off. So spoilers for Clone High. the other character that people have kind of gotten attached to is Vincent Van Gogh, who's just, like, a background character. But he has one of the more interesting designs in the show. The show is, like, an interesting animation style that's, like, kind of Powerpuff Girls-ish, almost. But, like, jankier. But basically, they have Vincent Van Gogh with his, like, bright orange hair, and he's very, very short. He has, like, the bandage around his head from, like, chopping the ear off. And he's just, like, basically this little gremlin menace who shows up in, like, two episodes. But people really, really, really latched onto him in the same way they latched onto JFK. So there is a person on TikTok who's done, like, dozens of Van Gogh from Clone High cosplay videos, lip syncing to songs that connect with, like, the three scenes that the character has. So, you know.
Can we link to that in the show
notes? We can. Okay. It's good. I've watched too many of these. But yeah, so that's interesting. I'll be interested to see if anybody else tries to, like, intentionally market this way. Because this was, like, accidental. What they did is the thing that makes all memes successful, which is they made it a baseline where everybody could understand the source material. Mm-hmm. And therefore understand the memes because they understood the source material. So making anything accessible to people is going to make it much easier to memeify. So I will be interested to see. First off, companies, like, holding on to their copyright, not giving their content away for free, which makes sense.
Right.
So that might be a resistance point. And then anytime a company notices that something works for marketing, all the advertising agencies immediately run it into the ground. like, you see that with, like, the activism advertisement short films of, like, 2 years ago, where they're like, misogyny bad, a short film by Nike running shoes, right? And it's just, like, part of it is, like, get a bunch of attention from angry conservatives, and then part of it is, like, get thumbs up from the progressives, and then part of it is cover up all the child labor you're doing, that kind of thing. And before that, it was, like, sassy social media accounts like Wendy's, and it's just these things come and then they get, like, the horse is beat dead and then beat some more and then they stop. So I'll be interested to see what kind of people are watching this.
Indeed.
And what they're gonna do. Speaking of marketing, let's have an ad break.
Okay. This episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by the Edmonton Community Foundation, which has done such outstanding work in our city for all of its time existing, but certainly during this pandemic. Among the many wonderful things the ECF does is the Well Endowed podcast, which explores the impact of passionate people who are working to make Edmonton a strong, vibrant city to live in. The Edmonton Community Foundation helps people create endowment funds, and the podcast tells the stories of how those endowments intersect with the community. Episode 83 is about Santa's Anonymous, which is an Edmonton charity that delivers thousands of toys every year to kids.
That's nice.
It is nice. I would advise you to listen to that episode and all of the episodes, and you can subscribe at thewellendowedpodcast.com.
Nice. So, Mom, you did some research for this episode.
Oh, no.
So now I'm going to ask you questions, unfortunately. Oh, no. What is an avatar, would you say?
An avatar is a digital representative of a person.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. And what do you kind of associate with that way to represent yourself?
Video games and video game adjacent things.
Okay.
And I guess social media networks too, like although I always use my real face.
Memojis, Bitmojis, that's kind of that space.
Kind of cartoonified versions of a person that you inject into various online places where you go.
Yeah, I have a Memoji and a Bitmoji, and I resent them every day I see them. I had to get them for school, literally.
You did?
Yeah, we switched to online. My Spanish teacher was a great person, but also trying to be cool, decided that we had to write our sentences in Spanish, and then we had to choose like 3 Bitmojis to represent the thing we did in Spanish. And so I had to make one that I had to save a bunch of pictures of it to my phone to put it on my Google Classroom so that I could complete my Spanish assignments. Then I stopped doing it because we'd been doing online learning for a month and I was like done. But yeah.
Wow. I know my phone wanted me to make some kind of emoji mm-hmm. of some mm-hmm. kind, but I refused. I don't want to.
Good. You're stronger than I am. So brave.
Just resistant to dumb things that I don't understand. So enlighten me. Perhaps I will change my mind.
They are not worth anything, in my opinion. I've never seen somebody cool use one, I guess is my benchmark.
I shouldn't say that because I can't agree with that, rather, because I do have friends.
Old person cool.
Yeah, I have friends who use them and I can see the value. I can see the kind of interest in making yourself a cartoon character who can maybe do things a little bit more extreme than you would do in real life.
I get that. I think emojis already fulfill that need, and you don't need like an avatar of yourself to do that per se. And I think, just to qualify, when I say cool, I don't mean that as like a judge of your character or even like your popularity. It's more like trend setting or like people who are using like the standard forms of communication for my age group, basically. Like, if somebody sent a Bitmoji to me or a Memoji to me, I would be like surprised. Like, why are you contacting me in this way? Are you pretending to be a teenager? I need an adult. And I think that's kind of more the thing. But yeah, on the internet, anonymity is valuable. It's a safety thing. You don't want to get doxxed, you don't want to get stalked, you don't want to get harassed, you don't want your OnlyFans being sent to your boss, like lots of stuff, right? Like tons of reasons that it's very useful to not have a face. You want to harass people and have no consequences? No face.
Right.
No that's consequences.
Also, that's the bad part of anonymity on the internet.
But that's just as valuable to those people. It's people trying not to get harassed, right?
Yeah.
Again, this is not like a value judgment of value. This is just like basically the appeal of the avatar. But clout and parasocial attachment are also valuable if you're trying to gain a following online, right? People connect to people way more than they connect to like the abstract creative project a lot of the times. Or if you want people to stick around and you're doing one mini series and that mini series ends, you need them to like you so that even when you're making something completely different, they stay, right? But that's hard to do if you aren't a person, right? Like, how connected do you feel to the typical anime profile picture, Mom? Would you say you've bonded with those dead, wide, wide eyes?
I know, but I hesitate to say because we're not anime lovers, but I know that there are people in our audience who really like that. They like that style of art. They like the kind of storytelling that's in there.
I want to make it clear. I am not insulting like anime as a thing, although it is very much not my thing. I've tried. I can't get into it. It's just not my space. I'm sure there's an anime I'd like somewhere. Please don't send me recommendations. I don't even watch Netflix anymore. I like listen to podcasts and watch YouTube, and that's it right now. But there is a kind of connotation around anime profile pictures because they let you camouflage into a space. They don't usually like boost your profile. So the advantage of like the anime profile picture is tons of people in weird subcultures and like fan groups have anime profile pictures. So if you want to infiltrate one of those groups or make friends in one of those groups, then you will look exactly like anybody else. It's also a good way to disguise your bots if you have a bunch of bots you want to use to do something online. Anime profile pictures is better than like default egg or whatever Twitter has these days. So that's a pro tip for if you want to do shady things on the internet.
I wish our podcast microphones could somehow convey the huge eyebrow arch that you just gave me now.
Additionally, like, how bonded do you feel to, like, just, like, a stock picture of an animal that somebody has that they're representing themselves with? Like, it's a cute animal.
Yeah.
But you're not a person. I'm not making eye contact with you, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what you look like. I don't know who you are. I don't know if you are who you're saying you are. All this stuff. So, for ages, internet personalities have been working around this by representing themselves with, basically, artwork. That's, like, custom to them. Or branded to them. So a sort of like YouTuber sona is how I describe it.
I like that.
Yeah.
Praise.
Like the same way that you have a fursona, you have a YouTuber sona, which might also be your fursona because we're on the internet. The viewer can relate to this while allowing the creator to stay private. There are sometimes stock images that people use, and then sometimes it's just custom 2D art, and usually there will be, like, a standard character model, and then that character model will, like, flip between, like, five different expressions or something in a similar way to something, like, if you've used Memoji or Bitmoji, like, that similar kind of thing, where it's, like, you have the basic template of the character, and then the character will do different things and be happy or sad or skeptical or whatever. And this also, like, it basically allows the creator to connect to their audience while still remaining distant from their audience and not getting recognized on the street, which you might not want to do if you're just making YouTube videos for fun, right? Mm-hmm. VTuber is not the same as this, and there are just a few small distinctions. What does VTuber stand for? Can you guess? It's like basic internet portmanteau.
I don't know.
Virtual YouTuber.
Oh, okay.
Somewhat unsurprisingly, this idea has its roots in Japan. Like, if you look at the art style, if you look at, like, most of them are Japanese characters, all this stuff, it's just, that's where it's from. Very distinctively. VTuber art and animation style resembles Vocaloids like Hatsune Miku. Remember when, like, Hatsune Miku was, like, a really big thing? The Vocaloid with, like, the blue hair that, like, goes down to the ground on either side, and they do, like, these big concerts, and it's all, like, computer-generated music. It was the future of AI for a moment.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
A vague recollection, if you, like me, do not really remember this, we will link to it in the show notes.
Cool. I don't know. Maybe this is, like, a thing that people who are, like, 25 under just know, or 30 under, and, like, you guys just kind of missed it. Whereas, like, I was, like, a little kid when this was big. But I, like, kind of absorbed that it was a thing people cared about.
I wouldn't describe this to my age so much as my obliviousness.
Cool. There's, like, an episode of Black Mirror that's kind of a parody of this. It's not great. It has Miley Cyrus in it, though. Anyway, moving back to VTubers. The first VTuber to use that term was created in 2016. I have never really pronounced Japanese words before, so name pronunciation sketchy, but Kizuna AI is the name, and she has over 2.8 million subscribers on her main channel. Actual viewership, like, fluctuates wildly, but mm-hmm. like, tons of subscribers for kind of not a person. This is very much one of the things I don't get. She speaks in Japanese. She has a voice actress, and then has, like, English subtitles on all of the videos. So, like, it's kind of going for both audiences. And she does, like, music and covers and all this stuff. And she's just this, like, 3D animated character with, like, brown hair and kind of a cutesy outfit, basically. And she's, like, relatable teenage girl thing.
Okay, but she has a voice actress voicing her, mm-hmm. and presumably expressing feelings yeah. in that way. So what is the difference between an actress who has an avatar and an avatar that is voiced by a human?
So I do feel like there's a clear distinction, and it's interesting to me. I think it's a very interesting thing. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But this style of content has actually had like a pretty corporate influence from the start. Consider the Barbie web series. Barbie has a career as a YouTuber with like a standard vlog structure, and has been vlogging since 2015.
Oh.
In my opinion, this is the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the same, like, hi, I'm an animated character, but you're meant to accept that I am living in a world and that you are my fans who I'm interacting with. And this is my life. I am Barbie. I am your friend. like, in my opinion, exact same thing. Some of these VTubers have like agencies and like kind of a ton of people working on them. Some of them are like just independently run. There's like a whole spectrum there. But the idea is that like the character stops at the avatar. There isn't someone behind it, which I would say is the main distinction. VTubers created with a combination of like voice acting and motion capture, and that allows them to live stream.
Oh, okay.
Which is an advantage. And they are able to make money the same way that YouTubers are able to make money. So they can run ads on their videos, but they can also live stream and get super chats. They can stream on Twitch and get subscribers on Twitch. All sorts of ways to make money with this. While also like not having to show your face or your unmodified voice or be a single person or like any of this stuff.
Or
right?
Get paid more than whatever the like minimum union rate for that kind of work is.
Yeah. And the software and hardware needed for this is becoming more and more accessible. I've actually seen people on my Twitter like, maybe I should make a VTuber, and I don't understand this impulse, but I've seen it multiple times. I'm not sure I'll be able to grab sources because it's just a thing you see pop up on your feed and you're like, oh, I mean, okay. I think the appeal is the degree of anonymity you can get from being behind something like this. And that's because of the key difference between a VTuber and a YouTuber with an avatar. Usually, with a YouTuber with an avatar, the avatar is a surrogate or mask for an actual person behind it, which is why there's like an appeal to doing a face reveal and being like, hi, it's true. I'm a person. This is what I look like. Okay. Don't be mean to me in the comments, says the perfectly normal looking human being. rather than like a person putting on a character. They could very well be putting on a character. It could be obvious that they are putting on a character. Doesn't make a difference. Like the basic idea is the audience does not make a distinction between hypothetical YouTuber movie boy 667, the picture of a film reel with stick figure limbs who reviews bad movies, and Phil Smith, the person who actually runs the movie boy 667 channel. Yeah. Those are basically the same thing to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
That avatar is Phil Smith.
Right.
As far as the audience is concerned. With VTubers, the avatar is the person. So the question, who is behind this character, doesn't make sense, basically, in this world, because you're meant to accept the avatar as its own entity, existing in your world, interacting with you as your friend, all of this stuff. Like Meet People, these internet personalities often have multiple social media accounts where the look and the personality of the VTuber are maintained. And it's just, this is the end of the trail. Like, you don't look past this avatar. The avatar is the creator as far as the parasocial relationship is concerned. You're not interested in the person who's doing the motion capture or the person who's doing the voice acting. That doesn't really matter.
It's like you don't care who the puppeteer is on, like you're interacting with Kermit the Frog, not Jim.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. So yeah, we're going to talk about where this can get kind of dark and eerie and exploitative. But first, while we're in a good mood, ad break.
Okay. Oh, well, our second ad is from sort of a cross-generational thing. So mm-hmm. the fact that we can talk about VTubers and Kermit the Frog in the same breath is kind of fitting. This episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by The Shared Mic. So the hectic pace of modern life makes it difficult to take the time to truly connect with other people. The Shared Mic, Conversations for the Ages, is a podcast by Age-Friendly Edmonton that's creating human connections one episode at a time. In this interview-style podcast, people from different generations and backgrounds meet to discuss topics that matter to them. It's been a successful social experiment because so far everyone has been able to find something in common. And we like talking across the generation gap, don't we?
Yeah, that's like kind of the thing that we do. Yeah.
But these people aren't, they don't even live in the same house and they don't even have the shared genes. So there you go. Season 2 is out now. It offers a fantastic selection of topics, including cultivating friendships, building careers, exploring virtual theater, volunteerism, and more. The Shared Mic is available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And it is brought to you by the Edmonton Seniors Coordinating Council and the City of Edmonton.
Nice, nice, nice.
Yeah.
So does the concept of the VTuber set off like Uncanny Valley alarms for you?
It does, but I mean, I should have looked at some before, but
yeah.
Is it like, it's not just the look of it, is this is not human, but it's close enough to human that I feel uneasy. It's also like this feels human.
Yeah, it's not even like the look at all to me, because it's so cartoony and stylized that like that's not in the realm, basically. Like, I'm just accepting, like there's suspension of disbelief happening here where I'm just like, I am going to accept that we are playing in this space and you are a living thing that is like this in this world. And I'm just going to roll with that and accept that. That's kind of just part of it. If you're into this kind of thing, if you're watching this kind of thing, that's where you have to be. What really does like Uncanny Valley it for me is a couple of things. The first thing is the way that they try to cultivate like a parasocial relationship with the audience, where like one of the videos I watched is just the character talking about how she really wants the audience to make her an intro, and all the other YouTubers have cool intros, and so she really wants an intro too. So you, my audience of flesh people, flesh tubers, flesh creators, I would like you to make me an intro, please, please, please. I would really love it. You're my fans. I love you. I would love for you to make something for me. Here's my contest. Make me an intro. And that kind of thing, I was like, I already think that kind of thing's sketch when, like, meat-tubers do it. I'm going to call them meat-tubers for the rest of this podcast. when meat-tubers do it. Because it's, like, getting free labor from people that you're not paying them for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this was, like, you pay the top one, but even then you're still getting, like, a bunch of stuff from people. Like, the kind of thing that you'd pay a commission for if you didn't have a bunch of people who loved you so much that they'd do it at your beck and call and probably pay you to to use their intro.
Yeah.
So that already kind of sketches me out. There's a lot of, like, there's a history of YouTubers using, like, that parasocial relationship to get free stuff that maybe they shouldn't be getting for free. And there's an interesting conversation to be had there in terms of, like, where does fan art come into that? And to what extent does the YouTuber own the fan art made of them? A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a weird copyright space there.
It's
interesting. But that bugs me. And then the other thing is that this bugs me the same way that, like, resurrected CGI Carrie Fisher in Star Wars bugs me. It's kind of making a career that you shouldn't be able to replace with robots, replaceable by robots, right? Like, with a traditional YouTuber, or even a VTuber that's run by one person, right? The idea is that this person is putting in all of this labor. Their employer is YouTube or Twitch or whatever. They're siphoning off some of that money to host them. And then that person's getting all of the rest of the money that's coming from this work. And that they're putting their time and energy and funds into, right? And so that's, like, a very clear, very connected kind of expression of doing work, doing entertainment, right? It's not detached. Like one of the big Marxist ideas is like you're separated from what you're making, and that makes like work hard. We did a like thing about we did a brunch where we just talked about how capitalism bad for like an hour. It's still in my head, but like
shout out to Podcast Brunch Club. Thank you, hi. Lisa.
But like there's this idea, right, where people are separated from their work. That makes things worse, basically. That leads to exploitation. And I can kind of see this space, which was very safe from that to me, and very like built on semi-genuine relationships and semi-genuine people pretending to be extremely genuine people who cared about you, as like a safe harbor. And seeing that this technology can succeed in the same way, not all of these are hugely successful, but like it's capable of being successful in the same space, is concerning to me, I guess. And that's where it really hits like uncanny valley. I don't want our entertainers to be robots. And it's funny because this is where Max Headroom comes from.
Yeah,
right?
I was just thinking, this is Max Headroom. Holy.
It is. Like the idea of like the digital host of the show who does all of that just based on pre-programming. And there are still people behind this. Mm-hmm. But there's much more separation between creator and audience in this kind of setup than there is with one person behind a camera putting something together. There's a lot more like focus grouped. Who's writing this? Do we have a room of writers? Who's going to like... how do we make this as appealing as possible kind of thing? And yeah, that bugs me a little bit, I guess. But judging by the fact that I probably just talked for 15 minutes about it. But also, like, interesting. There's still a lot of work and energy and creativity clearly going into these, or at least some of these. I haven't, like, done a full audit, and I can't, like, make a pile of good and bad VTubers for you. But... the lizard brain doesn't like it, I guess, is my basic conclusion here. And sometimes this kind of marketing and connecting to people does get really dark, which is where we get to the very, very, very controversial League of Legends character, Seraphine, who was created and put in a video game and then immediately, like, bombed with controversy from all sides, which is something that happens sometimes when you release a new thing.
Right.
Is like the internet decides immediately to hate it. So League of Legends is a like standard game that is popular, that people play, that I have no interest in learning anything about type thing by Riot Games. They added a character named Seraphine to their game, but how they marketed her is what's really popped out to people, because they basically marketed her through her having a Twitter account. They have this for a couple of their like teams and characters and stuff, and it was like originally just fun, play along, pretend that you're in the same world as this fun character that they have. And then on October 10th, which is World Mental Health Day, the account tweeted, "We're going to Shanghai in 2 days, and it's finally setting in, all at once. I've been working so hard, and I've been trying my best to love myself, but I still can't find the confidence I need. This is not a real person. Yeah. I'm realizing that I can't do this alone, and maybe I need to be the one to ask for help. So could you give me some encouraging words? I need something to believe in right now."
Wow, that's so manipulative. Yeah.
I know, right? And then a follow-up, which is, "I don't think I'll ever be fully ready, but I know there's people believing in me, and that's more than enough. Thank you so much. I mean it sincerely. I'm going to face this head on." And then there's like a board of supportive comments in the picture. And people were not super on board with this. Because,
well, somewhere. Like somewhere sending her.
Yeah. People who weren't in like the fan bubble of this had concerns, because it's kind of it's a marketing strategy that's been done before. The most famous example is like the Sunny D tweet, where it's just like, "I can't go on like this," and it's just like, it's a marketing account for juice.
Yeah.
And then like the cannibalistic string of other marketing accounts to comfort it from its terrible slump. As far as I'm concerned, Sunny D can be as sad as it is capable of being. But this is kind of the same thing, but even more extreme, because it has a semi-human face on it, yeah. right? Like, this is an avatar in a lot of ways, too, and it's part of, like, a marketing campaign building up to the character's release in the game. So this is basically like, I'm so nervous before this big life change that is me being in this video game that I'm programmed to be in, that they've been planning to put me in for the last year. And, like, that's where I'm really worried about this kind of thing.
How do people know what is even real? Like, people, like, the people who are in that bubble don't care what's real.
Yeah, well, it's suspension of disbelief. They've accepted mm-hmm. that it's real, basically. And they've accepted, like, that they're going to play along with this. And there are plenty of people who are, like, mature and capable of doing that. And I think trying to judge which people are capable of doing that is a misstep.
Mm.
But there are also, like, concerns over, like, five people working on a corporate marketing account pretending to be a real human being who is struggling, right?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that kind of trivialize that actual struggle and cry for help a little bit?
Absolutely.
Like, you could argue that, like, it's normalizing mental health or this or that, but it rubs me the wrong way because you're using it to promote your thing. It's not like, we're doing fine and this is just a thing we do for the fun, and out of the goodness of our hearts, we're also going to raise awareness for this thing. It's raising awareness for my business that I'm running that I get money from
mm-hmm.
to me. So, you know, fun. Fun. Dystopia.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's like, on the one hand, it's like a continuation of things that we've seen for a long time. Mm. But on the other hand, it's just seems like so of this time, like such a, like, because it's the technology has created the possibilities for this to happen in a more, I don't know, engrossing way. And, mm-hmm. and also it's like just, being a fan of a pretend character is normalized, right?
Yeah, and, like, I think that's kind of always been the case in terms of, like, you would see something in a book or TV show or whatever, and you really connect to that, and you get attached to that character. That's a fairly common thing. I don't tend to experience it, but, like, it's clear that that's a thing people do. And so I actually think it's generally better to get very, very attached to a fictional character than it is to a real human being, generally.
Yeah.
Because that is putting a lot of expectations and pedestal raising on somebody who's definitely imperfect and about to get canceled for something on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's good in terms of JFK cannot hurt you, you know? Like, in that space, I'm kind of inclined to say, if you are bound to get, like, weirdly parasocially drawn to characters, fictional is better than real. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's that weird lizard brain, beep boop robot pretending to be human type thing that just squicks me out so completely. So, yeah, only fall in love with cartoons from old TV series. They will treat you correctly. They will treat you kindly. They won't manipulate your affection for clout online. And they won't get canceled on Twitter. So, you know, perfect peace, perfect balance. All you could really need in a soulmate.
Choose wisely.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you for telling me about all of this
stuff
and nonsense. You can subscribe to our show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever else pods are cast. You can also find us and the rest of the outstanding members of the Alberta Podcast Network at albertapodcastnetwork.com. Many thanks to John, recently freed from too much homework. I hope, for editing this episode. We are on Twitter at That's a Thing Yaeg, and you can always email us a question or a comment at thatsathingyaeg@gmail.com. If you want a That's a Thing button, send us a message. We will get one to you.
Yes.
Is that everything?
That is everything.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Bye.